Who do you have coming up next? Our next session. You know what? We're going to jump right into the next one because we've actually decided to let this next video run a bit longer. Right. We've been trying to average around 20 minutes per, with also some Q&A. But the next session we have coming up is actually by a gentleman by the name of Jared Green, who works for Cherwell Software. Or Cherwell Software. I'm going to have to get the proper pronunciation from him when he joins us momentarily. But it's interesting. Most times when you go to a conference, people are always concerned. I always hear this as a presenter, as someone delivering sessions, that there's going to be too much marketing going on. Mm-hmm. It's almost like marketing's a bad word, but I want you to stop, take a minute. It's not a bad word at all. Take a look at this one here, because he's going to be talking about what IT can learn from marketing,
right?
Specifically. Basically trying to elevate yourself up into more of a business partner type of status. Mm-hmm. Similar train of thought and threads to some of the things we've been talking about with Jeffrey Snover and also with Nick Corcodilos as well.
Yep.
Unless you have anything else.
Should we put the quiz question out?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the quiz question. Yes.
The quiz question for this one is, according to Jared, what does level 5 achieve on the maturity model?
Very nice. Nas, you know what to do.
Good day, gentlemen. My name is Gerard Green. I'm the Vice President of Product Marketing at Cherwell Software, and I'm here to talk to you guys about what I think the IT organization can learn from the marketing organization. It's fun to be here at the Microsoft Innovation Center in Flatiron City in Atlanta, Georgia. And in that same context, I think in the theme of innovation and disruption, it's nice to be able to help IT professionals understand some of the changes that are set to occur in their day-to-day roles and responsibilities. So IT and marketing, right, completely different organizations, different people, different processes, different goals, different objectives. One of the things that's interesting about these two organizations is that over my career, I've gotten a chance now to spend a good amount of time with both groups. I was at Gartner, my first job out of college, right? I started there in 2004. And I worked in their contact center. So I took first level calls from Gartner prospects, Gartner employees, you know, potential Gartner users, and folks would call with a wide variety of questions and inquiries. And in place of those inquiries, that's when I first started to understand how to identify market problems, right? Because what they were calling up with were the things that kept them up at night, right? How do I select the right service management tool? How do I build the right dashboard? How do I demonstrate value to the business I support? And in fielding those questions, my job was just to line them up with the right analysts. So take the question in, get them to the analyst that can answer the question as quickly as possible, right? Those are my metrics and guiding principles. And starting to understand some of the patterns that started to exist was, okay, these types of questions come from these folks, and these are the questions we get to these types of analysts. I developed a competency in the IT operations management area. So when I moved from that contact center role into the IT operations research engagement specialist role, I was doing closer alignment of those questions to the analysts that had those answers. And again, pattern recognition said, these are the research notes you provide. This is the analyst you set the call up with. These are the expectations you set. Here are some of the vertical considerations you want to understand. So it was a great job, right? It was a great job to sit at that intersection of people with questions and people with answers. But over time, I wanted to be the person who had the answers. So I just continued to take that information. It's like being locked in the law library if you wanted to be a lawyer. You know, it's just this great job to have. Apply for the research role, got the research role, and started covering the service management space, which I had a good amount of knowledge in. Again, being that intersection between people who had questions and people who had answers. And then the pattern started to emerge once again. So now a much deeper understanding of the pain points of these buyers, right? And having the answers to say, organizations in your situation can do this. I've seen them do that. I think you should apply this approach. Also having the foresight to say that most of my conversations weren't just with the buyers, they were with the tech providers. So the vendors in the space who were selling solutions to these folks obviously engage the Gartner analysts, right? They want the analysts to understand what they do, their messaging. They want them to understand what problems they specifically solve and work to differentiate themselves in the market. And so again, having access and insight to now the buyers, the other analyst peers, and the tech providers was this great place where you got to create ideas and new thoughts and challenge conventional wisdom. And I really enjoyed it. And so again, in being able to sit in that seat and work to understand specific needs and buyer pain points, you started to think a lot about the marketing aspect. Because really what the vendors were asking you sometimes was about, how do we build the technology? What should the roadmap look like? How can we prioritize? How can we differentiate? But they were really looking for was insight on how to go to market, right? They were looking for insight into what messages and how to position, how to price, how to package. And that really challenges you as an analyst to now cover a space where if you didn't have a marketing background or a marketing set of competencies, it may have been somewhat of a challenge. I believe I rose to meet those challenges. I did go out and get my MBA from the University of Georgia, go Dogs, but did go get that MBA to understand those principles. And then shortly thereafter, I ran into a company by the name of Cherwell Software that I covered as a vendor. They had needs on the marketing side. I had a desire to be in a marketing role and wanted to make sure I could provide value for them. And so made that move in 2014, late 2014, and have been there now for about 14 months. But I say all that and give you all that context to say this. I do think the challenges that IT professionals have are very similar to the challenges that marketing organizations have. And it stems from the fact that IT organizations, at the heart of all those challenges that they articulated and talked to me about, really struggled to demonstrate the value of what they do. And it's paramount to do it now, and it's paramount to do it 5 years ago, and paramount to do it 10 years ago, because at the time the threat was outsourcing, right? The threat was someone else can do what we can do as an IT organization better, faster, and cheaper. And I need to spend all my time and resources proving to my business leaders that that's not the case. So what metrics do I need? What reports, what dashboards, what KPIs? How do I demonstrate what it is we do as an IT organization that'll keep me gainfully employed? And I got that pretty quick. And so now when you started to see the shift from not so much, you know, strategic or sometimes even tactical outsourcing moves, what software as a service and cloud computing brought to the table was the opportunity to kind of cut the stack up and say, I just want to outsource the software. I don't want to necessarily deal with the infrastructure or the people to manage the infrastructure. I just want the software. I just want that layer. And there were a number of providers at the time, this is 2006, 2007, who were eagerly ready to meet that need. And so now you started to get this threat of shadow IT, right? And the business going directly to these providers and the providers being able to get a meeting with business leaders that IT people who work for the company couldn't even get. And so it was interesting to see the shift of shadow IT and the business bringing in things that now we have to support, making our jobs harder, making it more difficult to demonstrate that business value, because you're asking us to support solutions and services and architectures that we didn't improve on, that we don't have standards, that we don't have people skills to support. And the vendor knew that, right? The vendor willingly kind of brought that business in, and it wasn't until you started to see the business really take to these solutions at scale where IT realized that they had a real issue on their hands. So the marketing element was successful because, again, those providers, those organizations, those solution providers were able to influence those buyers directly. They were able to tap into their pain points. And a lot of their pain points were, you have an IT organization that isn't agile. You have an IT organization that doesn't move at the pace that it needs to make you successful. Your IT organization is holding you back, isn't it? And they always got a resounding yes. And looking back at the Gartner data, this was around the same time, and it still continues to be the case, where IT organizations used a maturity model and continue to use it that gave them a sense of, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being this chaotic, firefighting, reactive organization, to 5, which is this valued business partner, about 90% were probably at level 2, which is, you know, the committed stage where we're looking at idle best practices, but, or we're working to do tool standardization and solution standardization, but, or we're working to hire the right people with the right skills, but we need to demonstrate that business value first. And it became this chicken and egg thing. Right? How do I demonstrate value without the right resources? And how do I put this equation together? And it's interesting because a lot of the time they spent was working to build that case to get what they needed, but just couldn't quite generate sort of the momentum to get it while these cloud providers were knocking at the door. So it's not to say that they were threats, but they were something that IT organizations had to recognize. And the landscape only grew. More service providers, right? More cloud options, more software as a service, infrastructure as a service, compute as a service, fabric as a service. All these solutions were ever available. And the competitive landscape went from they're going to outsource the entire unit to they're going to outsource pieces of it. And the onus is going to be on us to support it. And IT organizations continue to say, we don't get a seat at the table. We don't get the opportunity to influence. We don't get the opportunity to talk about the value we provide. And it's not to say that they can't, but we do need to articulate what maybe some of the risks are, what some of the requirements are going to be. Let's make sure that when they shop safely. And we're just now starting to get to a place where this can happen at scale. So I tell you all that to say this intersection between successful marketing to your business leaders that the providers have done need to be techniques that we as IT organizations deploy to get the same meetings, right? To get the same opportunity to influence. And I've seen organizations start to have success with using some of the same, we call them B2B marketing approaches that the service providers use to win and gain influence with their business partners. And so where does marketing come in, right? Because these service providers do a really good job with targeting the right organizations or targeting the right persona, targeting the right buyer, having a message that resonates, showing how they solve for the pain that they experience, and then ultimately moving them along the buyer's journey, even when they might not have even been looking for a solution in the first place. They do that very well. That's why they're able to grow revenues and able to sustain operations. What I think we need to look at is our ability as the internal IT organization is a lot stronger than someone outside of our organization to do the same things, right? We know exactly when our users log in. We know exactly when they log out. We know what systems they use. We know what systems we don't. We know what systems they don't. And so a lot of times we don't take that opportunity to gather, again, some of these buyer pains or some of these market problems from our own organization to build the case that we can actually provide the best solution. Even in instances where we can't provide the best solution, we can help you select the one that's going to make the most sense given our risk profile, given our requirements, given our business goals and objectives. We can help you shop safe. And I'm starting to see organizations play that role rather than just kind of fight shadow and fight the crowd. It's let me help you make the right decision. I always use the analogy. It's like if you got teenagers, right? You want them to, you know, have a party in your basement, right? You're going to party, you're going to have fun, but do it under my watch and at least let me have the sense that I can control what's happening down there. But to a certain extent, right, it's the same analogy we tend to borrow from the business, which is I want you to shop safe. I want you to shop protected and I want a seat at the table when we're making some of these decisions, because I might not influence the decision directly, right? You have requirements. We want to make sure those requirements get met, but I do want to make sure that the solutions that we bring in do align with the standards and do align with what we're able to realistically support. So again, this concept of competing for the business's business is one that I really want IT professionals to understand, is that it's not that the competitive threat is some offshore outsourcer, but the competitive threat is with all of the cloud-based, consumerized solutions that exist in this ever-ready cloud that can be brought in at a moment's notice with the swipe of a credit card. All right, so one of the best managers I ever had was the manager at the contact center. And she used to say, you know, every interaction is a moment of truth. And basically what that meant is like, you know, you are what the customer or the prospects says you are in that moment of interaction. So, you know, make sure you're always on, make sure you're always up, make sure you're smiling, it comes through over the phone. And that's the one way our business users, you know, think about IT. Their moment of interaction is typically through the service desk, right? They tend to base a lot of the perception of IT on their interaction with that level one analyst, right? And so the mood, the skill set, the attitudes, the competencies of that level one agent could determine the perception of the entire organization for that one individual. And we've long known this, right? It's why we do customer satisfaction surveys. So it's when that ticket gets closed, an email might go off to that user to say, well, rate your level of support today, right? Was it good? Could it be better? And those scores have been about the same pretty much the last decade, right? It's you get probably a 20% response rate on those surveys to begin with, and half are from people who really like you and half are from people who really don't. So you don't get into that silent majority in the middle of the bell curve that's really telling, right? I would always say that silence is deafening, right? They don't fill that survey out because they didn't have a good experience, right? They don't fill the survey out because we don't action it, right? We don't do anything to fix the problems. We don't do anything to fix the people, right? So we'll take that silence to mean we must be doing a good job, otherwise things would be a lot noisier. And I look at that intersection again, right? I'm big on intersections, but I look at that intersection again between these exacerbated or upset or exaggerated, you know, business users with the service desk, the frontline service desk. And oftentimes they butt heads because when you call the service desk, it's typically when you're most vulnerable, right? Something's broken, I need to get something ready, I got a report due, I have a presentation due, I need this now. I tried to figure this out myself, I tried to search a knowledge base, I tried to Google it, I tried to Bing it, I tried to figure this out on my own, and I couldn't. So my call to the service desk is a support resource, a last resort. When I get that person, it's usually a canned script of, well, is it plugged in? You know, when did it last work? And I immediately get frustrated, right? And we're all guilty of that, right? But I think what's telling about it is that a lot of these efforts, you know, again, to borrow some of the marketing techniques, aren't holistic, you know, efforts that everybody in your IT organization has to undertake. Typically, it's going to start with the service desk, right? If that's the first group that gets touched, that's the first group you want to work through. And a lot of times, again, that first level of interaction or that first point of interaction might not be over the phone. It might be through the self-service portal. So I ask IT pros all the time, what's your self-service portal look like? Is it intuitive? Is it easy for me to find things? Does it give me information that I need to know? Is it telling me that a key system is down? Is that the system that I'm calling about? That means I don't have to call you. You can show me that you think it'll be back up in 30 minutes. Cool. I don't even pick up the phone because I know you're on top of it. Are there other users experiencing those same issues, right? This concept of social networking has worked really well for marketing, right? So we use social as a channel to sell all the time in the marketing world. What about that concept in IT? Your users are always talking, right? I call this the digitization of the water cooler conversation. They're always having a conversation about IT. It's just we're not always around to get it. So I find in a lot of organizations where social media or communities or social media platforms for the workplace have been implemented, there's quickly a conversation about IT in those spaces. And it's not always a positive one. When IT's not around to defend themselves, why would we check those spaces? We're out trying to close tickets and keep systems up. But you'll get a lot of good feedback. That's where that silent majority is talking. They're talking to each other in that virtual community, right? And they're connecting with people from all over the globe in your organization about the services you provide. It'd be wise to tap into those networks and not so much to defend or get defensive or start arguments, but start to pull feedback around what someone's expectations were, because those quickly become opportunities to engage, those become opportunities to influence, those become opportunities to learn. I talked to one organization who did this. They went into the community, they looked up a hashtag around IT in a not so friendly term, and they found about 40 threads of conversation on an issue that they knew nothing about. And so I called the help desk and they said, do this, it didn't work. Yep, typical IT. And people started to pile on. Once the IT leader was able to get in and say, here's the solution, and at the same time, let me investigate where we went awry, they were able to fix the problem. And not only did they fix the problem, them being in the community signaled to the business users that they are listening, right? And if we, you know, if we're vocal, we can get the response we want, but there's no value in kind of doing it outside the IT organization. So I talk about the self-service portal as your face. From a marketing perspective, our website's our face. Now, no offense to our salespeople, but our website is really where people start the conversation. And if you look at some of the marketing statistics about where a buyer's journey starts, like 70% of their work happens before they choose to pick up the phone and call a provider. And so again, our opportunity to provide the right information on the website, to connect with the pain, to provide the right content, to provide the right materials is paramount to our success. And I think IT organizations should think about the same thing. What kind of information and insight and engagement avenues do you provide on your website, on your face, that endears itself to your IT users, right? To your business leaders, to your consumers. And I think once you start to figure out what makes the most sense, it's now taken another step and start to understand personas. Because a lot of times when I start having these conversations with organizations, they say, well, not my users. My users are a different breed. And it's based on the interactions where that happened at the service desk. But not all users are cut from the same cloth, right? You might have millennial users. You might have a group of, let's say, longer tenured associates that might not ever go to a self-service portal, but need a different type of assistance. You might have users who are in the field constantly and aren't in front of a machine to do self-service, but still need help. Have you broken your users into personas? And have you addressed the needs of each persona in order to provide a higher level of support based on that persona? So again, in marketing, we do this all the time. We understand different personas. We have a service desk persona. We have a CIO persona. We have an IT director persona. And each of them are going to need different content, different materials at different points of their journey. Your users are in the same boat, right? Your users are going to need different pieces of information. They're going to consume that information differently. They're going to share that information differently. So again, a lot of the times, I think IT makes the mistake of kind of painting the user base with one broad brush, but the reality is your users are just as different as any other group of users. And so a lot of times I'm asking organizations to put on the shoes or put on the hat of the marketing organization and understand how many different personas are in the organization, and then tailor support for each of those personas accordingly. And we can still talk about phone-based support from a service desk perspective, but wouldn't it be great if I knew the persona of the person who called, not just their name, what department they work in, and what PC they have? Wouldn't it be great if I knew their level of technical competency, right? If I knew their level of digital literacy, if I knew their recent history of support interactions, so I could tailor my response accordingly. Again, things that service providers do really well, right? Because they operate as a business and they understand that retention and renewal and upsell is key to their business, where I think IT folks say, well, you're the users, right? We're gonna give you what we can when we can get it. We'll do service with a smile. We'll do a customer satisfaction survey. But to really deeply understand your pain and then tailor support to it sometimes can be seen as a next step that people don't believe they have the resources to do. I would challenge IT leaders to think differently about things like persona-based support, social-based support, right? Community interactions within the portal, designing a self-service portal that is highly engaging and intuitive. These are things you can do that don't take a lot of resources, right? They don't even require new tool investments, right? It's just simple design of a portal and the ability to bring in information with your service desk system. And then from there, right, the feedback you start to pull, the interactions you start to gather, now you've worked to try to change the tide a little bit. Now this is where you go out and you do market research. Now this is where you go out and you sponsor an IT lunch and learn, right? You get out into the field, you engage your users, because IT is not a four-letter word anymore, right? Now once you start to change perception, at least your face and your ability to interact and your willingness to interact, now you can get people to come to those Tech Thursday lunches where you can invite them in for food, but ask a lot of questions about their pain and ask a lot of questions about how they start their day and ask questions about their expectations of technology, and then work to build and design and support solutions in accordance to those requirements. So again, this is in itself the means to extract that information, but it's one of many steps you take. And as marketers, we do this all the time, right? As marketers, we get out into the field. We work to see if our messages connect with prospects. We work to make sure our prospects understand our value proposition. We do message testing. We do loss analysis. We get a sense of where things went awry so that we can stop doing them. And we also do win analysis because when we do win, we want to get a sense of these are the things we need to keep doing. So again, starting to build some of those techniques, and this isn't to get overly marketing geeky, but it is to get a sense of there are some practical things you can do as an IT organization to better connect to your users, all for the benefit of gaining influence, all for the benefit of increasing sentiment and increasing the likelihood that your business chooses to do business with you. So this concept of sentiment is important, right? Because again, it's what influences people to make decisions. So our ability to affect sentiment should be paramount to what we do in IT, right? Just right in addition to keeping systems up, right? Supporting and delivering services, those are important. But the ability to control and affect and govern sentiment shouldn't be an afterthought at all. Another area I've seen this a lot in is the role that, call it content marketing, plays. What kind of content does your IT organization produce? I'll ask one organization, they'll say we produce, you know, we might do a knowledge-based article, and we have a knowledge management system that periodically checks and makes sure the information in there is current so that when users and even technicians have issues, they can access the knowledge base, they can solve their own issue, or they can solve an issue for a user quickly. I think that content's amazing. But at the same time, I think there's different ways to do that kind of content. Starting to see organizations understand the role video plays, right? Video's a great medium to communicate complex concepts. And one of those things you could do is instead of using a 15-step knowledge base article, what would a 3-minute video look like that I could direct a user to and on a second screen follow along to solve that issue? And then what about the sentiment underneath the video? When you see this on YouTube all the time, I would encourage you to read every single set of YouTube comments, but you see it all the time where people say, thanks, that's helpful. Thanks, I appreciate that. I could watch an unboxing video all day, right? So I've seen organizations work to give users instructions on how to set up and how to provision PCs that they ship to users just to speed up the ramp up time, right? It just makes sense to use that channel and use that medium. So start thinking about content outside of just, you know, heavy text documents that's written in technical jargon and really use the medium that video provides to bring some of this stuff to life. Another form of content I started to see some organizations use is really testimonials. All right, and you see those a lot in marketing, right? Where people say, this is the best product I've ever used, right? I couldn't live without this product. This product's changed my life. I think IT can stand to borrow some of those same approaches to put together testimonials on ways they've helped business users out, on ways that they've solved business problems, on ways in which the business has engaged them to do things differently. And again, those case studies, those testimonials on video really work to reinforce the notion that the IT organization is here to help the business. So again, not needing to go deep into, you know, production value if you don't have the resources to do it, but being able to tell those stories resonate. You know, a lot of times users will say, what is IT done? What does IT do? I don't understand. It's a great thing to say, well, this is what we do, and here's how we solve problems, and here's how we can help you solve challenges. We want to work with you. But it's those techniques and those approaches that just, haven't been done at scale yet, but shouldn't forbid us from trying some of those techniques and approaches. I also see in organizations, really, again, you talk about getting out into the field and touching users. One of the things we started to see pop up are these walk-up support centers, right? And they work really well in centralized organizations, right? You know, healthcare, higher ed, right, where you have a concentrated set of users, you don't have dispersed, you know, organizations across the globe. When you can bring people to you to support highly technical issues in real time, you go from, you know, teaching them how to fish, or you go from feeding them for a day to teaching them how to fish, right? It's that interaction and experience of here's how you can enable yourself, here's how you can support yourself, here's how you can become self-sufficient. Should this happen again, here are the tools you need to solve this. You don't have to call the help desk. You don't have to wait in a queue. You don't have to open a ticket and wait. You can take these steps based on this interaction. And you've certainly seen this in the B2C world, right? You buy a phone, you get that phone set up. You might spend some time with the person at the store to walk you through how the phone works and how to change your voicemail and how to set your password. That's a great experience. And that's the reason why you don't have to call tech support for a lot of the consumer technology you get. because there's enough places where, you know, that phone call is supplemented with other mediums. So again, that interaction you can provide is simple for a lot of organizations. Your pilot for this might just be every third Thursday, IT sits in a conference room and your support team, level one, level two, level three people, a cross section of folks, tell people to walk in, come see us, we're here, we're open, we wanna help, we wanna support. And what they find out quickly is that users do one of two things, right? They'll come and they'll test it out, they'll kick the tires, they might have an issue, or they have a laundry list of issues, right? They got about eight things that bother them, but not bother them enough to call the service desk because they didn't want to go through the process. So they know with that laundry list, they can sit down, they can have 30 to 45 minutes with a technician to knock all those issues out. And one of them might be, you know, it takes 15 minutes for my PC to start up in the morning. Well, let's fix it, right? You never call the service desk about it. Your workaround was to go get a cup of coffee and talk about the Broncos game and then just kind of wait and then you sat down. What if I gave you 15 minutes of productivity back? And I gave you 75 minutes a week back just by re-imaging the machine. That's an issue we didn't know about because you never called us, but once we sat down and got to the heart of, you know, the ebbs and flow of your day, I can identify ways to make you more productive. And then that changes the conversation on metrics, right? There's no conversation anymore about, well, how did IT make me productive? Well, we've given the business back 200 hours, right? And just this one step, we've given them back 200 hours. What they do with that 200 hours, that's the business challenge, right? They could play Angry Birds all day. But if I've given them the 200 hours back and we start to see business goals and KPIs shift the right way, we should take credit for that. We should take a bow. We should acknowledge our role in helping to improve productivity. So again, this concept of walk-up centers or walk-out centers, right? Your ability to dispatch people. Mobile's changed the game for service technicians. So no longer do I have to walk around with the notebook, or when I see a user say, I'll support you, but you gotta open a ticket first. I can whip out my mobile phone and I can open a ticket on the user's behalf. Or for some solutions, I can scan the barcode on your PC and pull back the model number, the IP address. I can have all the information I need in the ticket, and I can simply say exactly what I did to resolve the issue. I get credit for the issue. It gets documented, and I don't have to get yelled at by my manager for stopping to help people with technical problems on my way back from the cafeteria. So our ability to reach out and touch someone has changed with technology, and that's where we should take that opportunity to scale our support abilities. Because again, that works to change perception bit by bit. I don't know where IT is. I don't know where they sit. If the technician is walking around actively looking for problems to solve, it changes that dynamic. It changes that dynamic a lot. So organizations who take that to the next level might even set up scheduling systems, right, where I can schedule a technician to come spend the time with me. So again, getting out in the field, getting out and interacting. Again, might be marketing, might be all PR, might be all fluff for you to set up that, you know, that enterprise support center and no one comes, but no one will question where IT is and what they're doing if you got a big, you know, beautiful innovation center like this one where people sit and wait for the business to engage. And they might come during peak time, they might come when it's appropriate, but the question about where they are and what they do kind of goes away a little bit once you start to solve some high-level problems based on the interactions that you have with your business leaders. And again, I think the last piece again is really transforming this notion of the customer sat survey from, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5 or a scale of 1 to 10, or even using some net promoter score techniques to really get into the heart of what you solved, right? Really to use easier ways for users to interact, moving away from the reactive survey that gets sent when the ticket is closed into passive open surveys. You know, one of the experiences I had is traveling through Europe. I was at Heathrow Airport. I got through the security, and there was a tablet, and it said, "How was your experience?" It had a row of happy faces to not so happy faces. And all I had to do was push a button to tell them how I felt. And it wasn't so much, you know, it was super easy for me to do is why I did it. It was actually kind of fun just to push the button and say, "I'm here." But think about the analytics now behind that, right? We tend to see people are sad on days when it's raining, right? So regardless of who's working and regardless of how fast the queue moves, if the weather is bad, it changes the way people feel. Had the same experience at a hotel. and thought about, well, what are the analytics behind this, right? So now the hotel can say, people are really upset on Tuesdays when it rains, that's when we'll have happy hour, right? That's where we'll do free drinks from 5 to 8 to change the sentiment and see the delta. So your ability to provide different means and mechanisms to capture user sentiment, things marketers do all the time, right? Things service providers do all the time. We don't tend to think that way, but it's very easy and it's engaging and it's fun. And think about your ability to now slice and dice the data against when a rollout occurred, or when there was a major outage, or when there was a major change, or when there was a major consumer technology announcement. You can really get granular with this data to get an understanding of how your users feel at any given time. Start to measure this periodically, historically, again, to work to better influence and better engage with your business users. All right, so these analytics you gather become important because that's information you have that these cloud service providers don't. And that's gonna allow you to appeal to your users. It's gonna allow you the opportunity to influence your users and your business partners. I mean, ultimately, that information becomes gold because, again, you have a better understanding of them from a technical perspective than they have of themselves a lot of times. So it's that opportunity now to highly differentiate yourself in a crowded field of solutions and solution providers. So really three actionable recommendations for you guys today. The first thing I would do is have a conversation with the marketing side of your organization about two things. One, what's your perception of the IT organization, right? Because now you're engaging with a critical business partner about their interpretation of you. If you go back to the Gartner Planet assumption, right, the marketing organization is going to spend more than the IT organization. So really, that's probably your key business partner through this whole journey. But talk to them about their perception of the IT organization in the focus group kind of approach where you can pull back sentiment from a highly visible organization in your business. And then the second purpose of that conversation is going to be to extract some of the marketing practices and techniques that they use, right? That's a core competency of theirs, right? That's a partner you can learn from. What are the things you do as a marketing organization that help us as a company differentiate? How do we separate from the pack? How do we compete? How do we price? How do we package? Those are questions you're going to want to ask, right? Most IT professionals might not have the marketing background or the marketing savvy, and that's fine. But go to the organization that does. Start to learn from them. Second recommendation I provide IT pros who want to start these types of initiatives is to, in working with that marketing organization, develop a messaging framework, right? And this quickly lays out what you as an IT organization does. You might have this established as a charter, but what's going to happen with the messaging framework is that you're going to have to provide differentiating messages, you're going to have to provide evidence, you're going to have to provide a core message, and this is really going to establish the base you use to build out content, to talk to your business partners, right? To start that engagement, the messaging framework is going to allow you to have those conversations much quicker and much more succinctly, right? So you're not going, you know, off message every time you have a conversation. It becomes a clear record of what you do, how you differentiate, and it should also include some forms of supporting evidence. So when I talked about using those kind of internal case studies, that's where this kind of information can go. So when people say, well, what do you mean you can help? And give me an example of how you've enabled one of the business units to move quicker and to become more productive, you'll have that handy. And then the third thing is, you know, really work to build out your face, right? When you talk about the service desk and the self-service portal, as I alluded to before, you know, really work to construct that in a way that's easy to use, intuitive, easy to navigate. Start to use it as a form of engagement with your users, not just a flat and static portal where you collect ticket information or you ask users to go to submit tickets. Really use it as a marketing tool to not only engage, but to provide services, right? You might have the ability to build a service catalog where users can request services and have those automatically delivered. You might have a portal where they can spin up virtual machines if they need to, right? Given the right permissions and given the right accounts and setups. You might provide a way to not only, you know, win favor and win influence, but to make yourself more productive, right? Let your users take on the things that, that they have the ability to do and allow you to focus on core competencies, right? About 40% of service desk contact volume is password reset, right? We're spending a lot of time doing password reset, and those are things users can do for themselves. They do it all the time at home. So, you know, providing the automation tools to free yourself up as an organization, you know, provides a dual role, right? You get free to do things, your users have the means to be productive, everyone's relatively happy. And you also work with the knowledge base, building those articles out, building them out in different formats, right? Doing different forms of content to provide them the answers they need to solve the problems that they have. And where applicable, you know, again, work to engage users socially. If that social media platform or that community exists, work to see if you can connect users who are highly technical, have enough savvy, have enough information to maybe help someone out with a non-technical issue that kind of borders it. Have them be the extension. Enable peer-to-peer support. It happens whether you enable it or not. It's that conversation at the water cooler. I'd much rather digitize it and then save that as an asset that the business can use later, or as an IT organization, give me the opportunity to help correct, right? If Bill tells Terry that these are the 5 steps to fix the issue and he's wrong on step 3, 4, and 5, I want the opportunity to fix that and say, I appreciate you, Bill, but here's the answer and this is what's gonna keep us safe. And so take those opportunities. So those 3 things, right? Talk to your market and organization about what you've heard today. See if it resonates, see if it gels, see what they can teach you about how they apply their marketing practices, but then use the opportunity to engage a strategic business partner of yours within your organization. Talked about redesign that self-service portal, really make it a more attractive face for what you're doing and what you're working on, and apply those principles. And again, develop that messaging framework, right? Be able to clearly articulate what you do, how you do it, how you're different from others, and then provide the support and evidence. And I think if you do that, you successfully borrowed some of the principles we use in marketing, apply them in your IT organization to work to get you back to a level where you can have that strategic relationship with the business. So hope you apply it and hope it does you well.
And we're back once again for the final session of the day, which is actually very, very interesting, my friend. We have joining us in the studio today, just got off the plane to join us here in the studio, Gerard Green from Sharewell Systems. Thanks for coming out, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, yeah,
appreciate
thanks.
It. Thanks.
So, we had a question that came up, which was, once again, what was the question?
The question was, according to Gerard. Sorry,
Gerard.
What does Level 5 achieve on the maturity model?
Yeah, so we talked in the session about the Gartner maturity model.
Right.
And it's similar to many maturity models you've seen in the past. And the Gartner 5 was the business partner alignment. That's the level in which you are a valued partner of the business. You are completely aligned to their goals and objectives, and you're aligned with how IT can help further those. And like I said in the session, there is few and far between organizations who had successfully reached that level. And I'm wondering if it's time to maybe revamp that model to a certain extent. I think it was built on an older kind of IT management framework, and it warrants consideration around the value of a Level 5 achievement.
Definitely. We had a couple of questions that come up on the prompter here during the session. If you want to go ahead and ask some questions now, because we are live currently with the hashtag TechNetVC, one of them that came up here was from Michelle. How does the cloud and other advancements change things?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think the one major way cloud and SaaS and as a service, you know, technologies change is that you no longer have to wait to build, right? There's a quicker time to market with what you do with respect to this particular topic. You don't need to build a large business case, get a lot of capital to now go to market. You can quickly test, quickly develop, fail quick if you need to, and start over and adapt what you've learned, obviously. And so I think with respect to IT organizations, there's that need to go out and either, you know, buy new ticketing systems or buy new service management systems or buy new collaboration systems. The cloud software as a service allows you to try before you buy, right? It allows you to get acclimated, to get familiar, get value, and see if it works and get out pretty quick. So that model's changed over the past decade or so, and I'm glad to see organizations take a more agile approach to their use of those types of tools.
Anything on the Twitters that you wanted to pull out? Or you got to go ahead and ask next on the prompt?
The second question here from Mary. Mm-hmm. What can marketing learn from IT? So spinning this, right? And it's really interesting because before the show today, I was talking to someone who said, you know what, we want to get marketing out of IT.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is kind of a spin on that, right? Like, what can marketing actually learn from IT?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one thing that comes to mind is just security and controls. So we have our, you know, security operations director. He calls marketing arts and crafts. It's it's fun. It's endearing. We get a kick out of it. But at the end of the day, what he's saying is you guys are terrible at security, right? And protecting information. Mm-hmm. You guys want to collaborate and move so quickly, right? But there's no concept of how you protect this information. What happens if you get hit by a bus and you're the only person with this information? So risk and controls is something I think we can learn a lot from IT organizations. But again, I think there's a lot we can teach them about how to brand, how to make the value proposition of what all the great stuff they're doing real to the business. So two-way street, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there's a follow-on to that one there, which was, how will marketing evolve to keep up with our DevOps world of constant updates, constant iteration?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, most marketing organizations you talk to are in this same cycle, especially in B2B tech marketing, right? You're moving with products every single quarter. So how do you keep up with the latest value proposition? How do you keep up with the competition? So it's about, you know, being lean, right? Providing these minimum viable concepts in your marketing approach to be able to communicate that quickly and adapt accordingly. So stop with the, you know, kind of overbearing technical message and just get to the guts of what it can do for your user and iterate. Mm-hmm.
I thought one of the themes that you had in your presentation was all about, it was like selling yourself to your department, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what should, if you were giving like an elevator pitch to an IT pro, like how do you sell yourself, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what would you say are best practices for that?
I think a lot of what we talked about was really the concept of branding, right? You don't own your brand anymore, right? Most companies are in that position. So I think a lot of it is just being visible, right? Being around, being active. We've heard stories about IT pros who support different levels of executives. They're on call, they're on speed dial. Yeah. And so it's being able to scale, right? Doing that at a much larger clip, really showing what you can do. And again, getting out of this break, fix, hero mode into an enablement role. So I can show you with my knowledge of technology and systems and processes how you can get things done quicker. So it's not all about fixing things that are broken, but helping you be more productive as a business leader.
Mm-hmm. You got another question up here from, I pronounced that one there. Agerhus.
Yes.
IT department spend, how can they generate revenue for the company, and can marketing model help potentially? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So it goes back to the productivity you gain. I think so much of IT has been around kind of protecting uptime and system availability, but what happens to that productivity, right? How do we quantify the value of that system uptime, having mission critical systems up and running? So I think it's these models that marketing can help. And one of the things, you know, we do as a company is we need to show companies the potential ROI you can get from an investment in our tool. Why aren't we doing the same things with our internal systems and applications that we support to show the business that if these are up and running, if these are successful, if you're using these the right way, if you're trained properly, this is the value you can recoup from them. And then what we talked about in a session was the cloud service providers of the world, the people that are going directly to your business users to make that case, can get that meeting. Why can't we as IT get that meeting? Because our business cases don't talk about what you can do with the productivity of uptime, and really the business value of IT messages missing.
Mm-hmm. But Molly asks a good question too. What is the biggest mistake IT people may be making related to marketing?
You mentioned it earlier. I want marketing out, right? Yeah. I want marketing away. I think there's an amazing opportunity for marketing and IT to work together. Mm-hmm. And it's not purely arts and crafts. It's about messaging. It's about value proposition. It's about branding. It's about content. It's about all the things that marketing organizations work through each and every single day, where you're trying to make a case to a group of people to do something you want them to do. So the science of influence is something that I really think IT pros need to learn, because it's not enough to just say your systems are up, your PCs are fixed, your servers are patched. Mm-hmm. What's the value of it all? And without the ability to communicate it, we're going to be stuck. Mm-hmm. So,
In your presentation too, I noticed you talked about the idea of cutting up the stack, right? And just like the value of KPIs and dashboards, and this is all related into this too, right? It's use the tools that you have to show people what's going on.
Absolutely, And it's another extension of kind of what marketing can learn from IT. IT is really good at dashboards and we love those, right? And so I think marketing has a decent way to go in the way of how do we make sure our campaigns and our messages are reaching the right audience effectively? So again, that two-way street's powerful.
Yeah. Nice. Any closing thoughts, my friend?
No, it's just been great. Just appreciate everybody kind of watching and submitting questions and just the entire experience. And thank you guys for having me on. Yeah, I appreciate
thanks.
It.
Nice, man.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you thank taking you. The time to sit down and talk with us. Pretty, nice time watching the video and also seeing you as well.
Absolutely.
And have a good day, my friend.
All right.
Yeah, take care.
Cheers. That kind of brings us to the conclusion so far for the TechNet VC Day 1. There's more to come.
Oh, yes.
Right? Definitely more to come. Just some little bit of housekeeping stuff in case you're interested. As I mentioned earlier, and we keep on mentioning all the time, is the fact that all the sessions will be available on demand 24 to 48 hours after we're going to be wrapping up for this particular one. Mm-hmm. But we do definitely have a Day 2 and a Day 3 that's still coming. If you're interested in doing things like engaging with us for the rest of today and also throughout the week, tomorrow and the day after, the hashtag TechNetVC is the way to go. You also have the ability to go through and still register on the TechNetVC.com website to be able to register, subscribe for the newsletter, and subscribe for updates, because that's where we're going to be sharing you some insights about all the different sessions that we did. Mm-hmm. You might get to see some behind-the-scenes footage and blooper reels as well, because trust me, there's a lot of them that are out there. So you need to go back to TechNetVC.com to be able to register for that one there to receive those updates.
And isn't that how you get drones and phones?
Yes, and so if you are able to go in and register on that individual site, and you've read the terms and conditions, followed MS_IT Pro, you're able to register and get a chance to win one of those drones and or phones that are out there as well.
Excellent.
So looking back on today, we had a lot of fun, and again, thank you for spending the time with us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me again.
It's been a lot of fun. If you could take your top takeaway, well, I'll give you two top takeaways. What would they be? From any session, anywhere, what would be your top two takeaways? I'm putting you on the spot.
Wow, you are.
Asking the reporter
I know.
To go in and
we never like
two.
That. We don't like being on the other side.
Yeah. I get to ask them.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You know, one thing that I felt resonated through a number of the presentations was the idea of how do you differentiate yourself? Mm-hmm. And it kept coming up in various ways that it's not just enough to say, oh, I'm there, I'm doing my job, I'm doing it the way I've always done it, mm-hmm. right? You have to think now about how you differentiate yourself, how you get more noticed by people in your organization, how you go to the next level. And you have skills that maybe 5 years ago didn't even exist, uh-huh. but now that these are actually part of your repertoire. So I'm even taking that away from myself as well.
Nice.
Yeah. Another one?
Number two, what would it be?
I think I might say artificial insemination. I don't know. There are many things I learned today, but AI and AI, they
AI and
are
AI
not the exact
there.
Same.
And the whole intelligence and connected cow, for
yes.
sure. If you wanted to reach out to us during the show, after the show, and going forward, obviously, I'm @SignRicksterCDN. If you want to reach me there on Twitters and yourself?
Yes, @MaryJoFoley
Mary Jo
on
Foley.
Twitter.
But we need to share, first of all, coming up on day two. Day two is going to be switching gears and going down more of the technical presentations and some demo kind of stuff. Today was all about fun and inspiration and that sort of thing. Day two is about Windows.
It is.
Some big names that are in there are going to be talking about a bunch of different stuff with regards to Windows 10. With regards to managing of devices and managing things. And also, still, the unknown topic we don't know, other than simply guest speaker, Paul Thurrott
and Brad Sams.
Brad Sams. So, can you talk a little bit about Brad Sams, and for those that don't know him and where he's coming from?
Yes. So Brad Sams used to work for Neowen, and now he has joined Paul over at Petri.com. Mm-hmm. Brad, like Paul and myself, is a Windows watcher, a longtime Windows watcher, longtime Microsoft watcher. So their talk ought to be very interesting. I've never seen the two of them present together.
I don't think they've seen the two of them present
together. No, I think it's going to be a lot of on a wing and a prayer.
Very nice. Well, we have a tradition here on the Channel 9 stage. There's two things I want to do here first. And there we go. One of the things, we'll save this, is
nice.
We get to see just how good of an arm you have, because you have to try to hit the center camera when we sign off.
Okay.
But before we sign off, there has been a number of tweets that have come up about my interesting hat. Mm-hmm. And so this is known as @SignRicksTillyHat is the Twitter account that I don't run, that actually the hat will go and converse with you if you're interested. But I have a request for you.
Okay.
I know you're from New York City.
I am.
And I actually have my old Twitter Tilly hat that has served a very good life.
Ooh.
And I need you to basically take that to New York City.
Okay.
Because I am able to get them exchanged.
Oh, are you really?
Yes.
Really?
And so I'm going to entrust you. This is a very dear and important thing.
Should I wear it?
You can
to
if you want. Although magical things happen when you put on the Tilly hat.
I'm scared. What's
going to
happen?
You'll start talking about Azure. You'll forget all about Hadoop.
Do I become a Microsoft employee
well,
by donning
I don't know.
The
there
hat?
Is an RFID sensor in there, so Rick's Tilly
Yikes.
Hat's probably going off and tweeting something
right.
about this right now.
But
if you could, please take it back. I'll give
I
you
will.
The address to drop that off. It'd be great.
I will.
But with that, we're going to say thank you for joining us. We've had a lot of fun here, as you probably have seen, from behind the scenes on the hashtag TechNetVC. And with that, I'm Rickster CDN, or Rick Claus, signing off.
And I'm at Mary Jo Foley. Thank you very much for
well.
Joining us.
And then now this is where you get to actually
really?
Go and see. Ooh. Can you hit that one over there? Give it a shot.
The camera itself?
Yeah, go ahead. Hmm. It's safe. Oh, first try. Look at that. Oh, and I missed, of course. Anyway, thanks a lot. We'll see you back here, 9 a.m. PST time frame for Windows. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.